Oh, OMG, there you are. Like, what? This is insane. People are obsessed. Come on, come on, come on.
This is the Extra Hot Rate Podcast, episode 251 for the week of May 13th, 2019. I am Church Rave David T. Cole, and I'm here with Stench of Portent, Sarah D. Bunting. future Yaley, Tara Ariano.
Now I'll never meet Handsome Dan.
And Poseidon Adventure reference, Emily Yoshida.
Oh yeah, I've definitely seen Poseidon Adventure. I'm 15, I've definitely seen it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. We promise to get to it very quickly, but first, a little bit of site business up top. Since the previously .tv forums have become the Primetimer forums, we lost sort of this magical connection between podcast episodes going up and forum threads being created. And as a result, discussion has sort of dried up there. So what we decided to do is to move discussion onto our dedicated sites for Again With This and for this podcast at extrahotgreat.com. So one of the things we're hoping to get is a couple users just to help us out with moderation. Nothing big, just to kill the spam that'll come through. If we can get a couple of volunteers, if that's something you feel like you can do, it won't be a lot of work. Please let us know either on Twitter at extrahotpodcast or by email at hello@extrahotgreat.com, and I'll set you up with all the moderation powers that you would need. Again, not a lot of work. It's just that I can't do it anymore. Guys, I've been doing moderation of forums and comments for 20 years, and I'm just done with it. So if that is of interest to you, you'd like to discuss this episode, please give us a ring, and we'll set you up to help us out. Thank you very much.
Please welcome our first-time guest, Emily Yoshida. Hello, Emily.
Hello, Emily. Yay!
Thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you here because we are discussing a teen show. This is the new Netflix drama, The Society. The premise is a bunch of teenagers that seem to be juniors and seniors in high school all go away for a trip to like a 10-day or something trip to the national park. Something happens on the road. They have to turn back. And when they come back to their town, everyone else who was there, adults and younger siblings and everyone is gone. So they soon discover they also can't leave because the roads are impassable now. And so they have to build their own society, hence the title, with what's left and only with each other.
Right. It's Under the Dome meets Lord of the Flies meets a little bit of Lost and all mixed together.
Dave and Sarah and I are all Gen X. You are a millennial. This is for teens. And I'm going to throw it to you first because of your youth, because all these shows make me feel super old. And yet, as you alluded to in your intro, all of these references are for people that are our age or older. What is up with the teens of this show? Why is this such a pervasive problem in all of these shows written by boomers or older?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the creator was the Party of Five creator, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even, maybe this makes me seem super young, but I wasn't really allowed to watch Party of Five when it was on. I certainly remember it being on and people, watched it, but I was not really around. So this is my first show by, I'm going to look up his name.
Christopher Kaiser.
Yeah. I don't know. I've been a aficionado of the teen shows though for a long time. I feel like Dawson's Creek was probably the first one where it was just like, oh, children do not talk like that.
No.
Children do not have that kind of vocabulary. And then it kind of continued from there. Like less of a vocabulary thing though, but more these kind of cultural references that I feel like definitely it's not over the top in this one, but the Poseidon Adventure thing was particularly it stood out. I was like, that girl was born in
2000s.
She was born in the 2000s. She was probably not alive when 9/11 happened.
She was probably not alive when the Poseidon Adventure remake happened.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she missed out entirely on all these great cultural moments. So, that stuck out. But in general, I am down for a teen show. I've not been 100% in on the Riverdale stuff and that version of teen show right now. Mm-hmm. Like it feels a little too campy or self-aware. I like a real earnest teen show. And so this definitely ticks that box. And, you know, we all love Kid Nation, so.
That was Dave's joke.
Kid Nation got dark. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I like you know, I'm a Battle Royale fan. You know, I know it's probably referenced to death at this point, but I still think it holds up in general. I think when pulled off well, a Lord of the Flies type story can be really fun and compelling at any level of brow, highbrow or lowbrow. So, yeah. So I was open-minded to this. I'll say that.
Okay. Yeah. Are you a 13 Reasons Why watcher?
No, I can't. That's too serious. I'll say, like, I'm not into tragedy stuff. I'm into like the drama being taken at face value and not being winky. I think when it gets to be about everybody has a horrible tragedy going on and everybody's killing themselves, it's just like, I don't know if I, that feels fun maybe when you're a teen and you have no reference for any of these things and you can toss around these ideas with this huge operatic exaggeration. But I think for me, I'm like, not going to be sitting down for 13 reasons.
Something more along the lines of Pretty Little Liars, perhaps.
Yeah. I watched some Pretty Little Liars. Sure. I one of my first jobs in content was running a Vampire Diaries fan site. I actually ran like a few of them for the site that I worked at, but I had to kind of manage a community of Vampire Diaries fans, and I got very into that show for a year or something. Got very wrapped up in it. So yeah, I dabble for sure.
All right. Well, I'm going to throw this to Sarah because she did watch 13 Reasons Why. And to me, that was the closest, I guess, relative to this one, maybe just because they're both teens and both on Netflix. But what do you think, Sarah, what do you think is wrong with the teens that these are the shows that they want to watch or that Netflix thinks they want to watch?
Well, I think it is more the latter. I think this might be more a thing that Netflix thinks they want to watch. Like, I will say, not to be this guy, but I was just teaching a college class of students who were like in college, obviously, and a few years older than these kids. But first of all, these actors are all 27, so whatever. Mm-hmm. And second of all, like my students were very against 13 Reasons Why because they felt like this took a serious issue and then made it cutesy with a bunch of cassette tapes and like a puzzle box.
That sounds familiar to my thoughts on the subject as well.
Legit. And like they were sort of okay with the book, but mostly outraged by the TV show. But this is the kind of thing, like, again, this is a college class at Tisch at NYU. So those kids would totally make Poseidon Adventure references. So I was sort of like not really bothered by that because there's always that one kid in town who does that. And then they all end up at Tisch, which is great for me. but yeah, I was like, this just felt like 13 Reasons Why without the sort of clueless co-opting of a very dark narrative to a like nostalgically cutesy puzzle. But also, don't we have this already in Space, the 100?
Yeah,
that's which I liked. Like, and I feel the same way about this that I now feel about the 100, which is like, oh, that's still on? Good for them. Like, I watched three episodes. There are likable performances and characters here. There are effective villains here. I like some of the actors. I just don't need to continue any further. Like, I'll just Google to see what happened, I guess, because it's just not doing anything new enough for me. And it's not the fact that it's a teen show.
Well, I mean, I will say this, having watched every episode of Under the Dome to the bitter fucking end. This is Under the Dome, except they solved so many problems that Under the Dome didn't even think of so quickly. Like, Emily, in Skype chat before we started, you said teens doing democracy, which is like, that's more than Under the Dome ever did. They actually do, at least at the beginning, try to organize things so that they function You know, for the community in a way that makes sense. And I thought that part was interesting, and then it seemed like it was quickly abandoned. But how did that work for you in terms of a plot thread?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say some of this might not seem as reheated as it may for you guys, because I don't actually watch that much television. I was like, I feel like the comparison points for this are probably like Leftovers and Lost, I feel mm-hmm. like. It's sort of and I watched some of the first season of Leftovers, and then I had to tap out. It's so funny. I watch so many like gnarly movies, and then a TV show gets like a little bit unpleasant. I'm like, nope, I'm out. Like, it's my fun time. I still watch Game of Thrones though, for some reason. But I think, so that didn't feel redundant to me. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. I think I enjoyed, even though I feel like there's a lot about this character that feels like incredibly confusing, the Cassandra character, the older uh-huh. sister.
Yeah.
Sort of like she was the student council president or something. And I kind of liked setting up her and this rich kid bully as these two opposing kind of political figures within the group of kids. That felt very like you could, you know, overlay any number of real life current day political figures over them and kind of like mm-hmm. get some mileage out of that. I thought that seemed, I would say that if I was maybe the target audience for this, I would find that incredibly clever and compelling. As an adult, I'm like, oh yeah, they did it. Cool. I don't know. I think when the kid who comes into the church with the gun, there's so many characters in this show, by the way, that
yeah.
It's really, that's the biggest thing it has against it.
And the boys all look the same.
They all look the same.
Frat guys. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yep.
And they all wear letter jackets, and it's like,
thank you for bringing it up. This was my one contribution, my real contribution to the discussion of the society. And it is a question that's been haunting me for years as a Canadian living in America. And that is this. Do football and sports people in American high schools really wear letter jackets like that? Or is that just a pop culture trope that has, you know, survived the ages?
So in my experience, speaking as a teenager on the podcast right now, I graduated from high school in 2003. We did have letter jackets and boys who wore them, but they would wear them on game days
right.
of school.
It was the dress uniform.
Yeah, like they're still wearing them when all of the parents are gone and it's clear that something very, like once they establish that something strange is going on, the boys are still wearing their letter jackets around town. That felt, it's like, is that your only coat? Also, it's supposed to be summer. Like, why are they wearing these heavy,
yeah.
like that's a pretty heavy jacket. So I don't know. It felt, it did not track to me.
To me, the jacket wearing all the time, sort of like that should have stopped when they also stopped sharing a malt
right.
with their yeah. date at the diner, because it's just like so of that time. And it just feels like they just didn't want to give up that shorthand, right? Because the shorthand
yeah.
is, if you're wearing a letter jacket, you're a jock, and therefore you are part of this group and not that group. And it's a useful shorthand, but I just like, I couldn't believe that still exists. Because I feel like these days, to show school spirit is like, you know, more of a detriment to your social standing than it is a positive.
I don't know about that.
I don't think so.
That's a very Gen X attitude.
All right. Fair enough.
Here's another thing that I am not crazy about. Like, I understand that nobody really knows what happened and they can't communicate with the outside world. Like, there's a number of references to the fact that they can call and text like each other,
yeah,
but nobody else is picking up, and they can't, like, cable Wi-Fi doesn't work, but it does seem, at least at the point where I stopped and was like, good luck kids, that they were not that interested, or not interested enough for my taste, in finding out what happened. Like, when are they? They talk about it, I think, maybe the second episode or whenever they're sort of setting up committees and stuff like that, that they're like, mm-hmm. and we will have a, you know, search for the truth committee. And it's like, great, follow that committee, because I don't care about people like teaching each other how to make garlic bread. Fuck out of here.
Hey, wait. Garlic bread's pretty important. They also seem to give up really quickly on the when does the real world actually begin outside of here? Like, it seems to me like they had like a half a day's hike into the woods. Somebody gets bit by a snake, you know, and then
they
that's
turn
it.
Back.
Well, it's obviously just goes on forever, guys. End of story.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like they're setting up that only nerds care about figuring out how to solve the mystery. Like, it's just the nice boy of the two brothers, the deaf kid and his friend. And they're kind of very much positioned as these like uncool kids, these nerds. They're like the politics nerds. And then there are the, we want to figure out what actually happens. And they all together number about like five people, some like hundreds of kids there. I feel like there would probably be more. STEM is cool now. I don't know if you've, I don't know if you've heard, but STEM is cool for the kids now. So.
And maybe they have to run out of booze for anyone else to not view this as a like awesome vacay with no parental supervision. So maybe that happens in like episode six.
Yeah, this I think this whole series is basically The Sims, like based on the physical. When you have a video game that is like open world in quotations, there is a limit to what you can do. So if you're like in The Sims and you're building your neighborhood, you can't go on forever. You have like a contained, you know, X mile radius that you can build all your shit. And that's sort of like what this is, right? Like Under the Dome in the universe was a thing in the world. And there's the dome. This feels like it is like Elon Musk saying we're all living in a computer program and we're not real. We're actually just pixels on somebody else's screen. And I feel like based on what we see early in this first season, like on the world of the first season, like that they can't escape, that some things work, some things don't work. It almost seems like somebody is going through a preference file in a program saying, okay, Wi-Fi doesn't work. This doesn't work. Like here's other parameters of the game.
Yeah.
And
that feels like a very like Gen Z thing, how specific it is about what technology works and what doesn't and how they can use their phones. Like it's very granular and specific about that and not some other things. So
they just have to turn on the Fortnite dances and then the show's going to be a big hit.
Oh, the other way you can get spoiled on this show pretty easily without even trying to is looking at IMDb, which I was because I was just trying to keep track of who all these characters were. Mm-hmm. And then I realized instantly it shows 9 episodes, 3 episodes. Yeah.
I watched 4 out of 10. And if this had been 6 episodes, I might have watched them all because it would have been close enough to the end where, I thought that something interesting might happen quickly. But like, as is so often the problem with Netflix shows or shows on streaming platforms in general, like it's too many episodes, like get to it. And especially when, spoiler for anyone else who, is going to watch this far, in episode 3, someone gets murdered. And then it's like, oh, okay, this is going to be about this now instead of like this other interesting, world building stuff that was happening.
And it's the someone who's the most like us. That's like the sort of bossy rule follower.
Yeah.
Not to put that on anyone else. That's me.
Also the most like us in that she also graduated high school in the 1990s, Rachel Keller.
I think like the stuff that actually like stood out for me or that I thought was compelling and might get me to keep watching are all the kind of, I hate to say it, but like the ships. Not that I can't, like I still can't differentiate who all these people are still. But there are some, I think the scene with the gun kid and the ballerina in the second episode, I don't know if you guys have gotten there. Yep. Like that was a really interesting dynamic and like was a kind of, it feels like a play on the kind of, oh, the world's over. Like we only have each other type thing. But like there was some, it was a weird kind of consent scene. It was about being like a loner and kind of two loners finding each other, but also with this weird sort of creepy factor in it. I don't know. I thought that was interesting. I still don't really care about either of those two characters as individuals, but I was just like that felt different. That scene.
Yeah.
And then the whole kind of dynamic of Cassandra is the only character whose name I remember because they say it over and over and over again. But her and the kid who's taking care of her or like was, playing doctor with her in the kitchen and this whole thing of her keeping him around because he can keep her alive or something. And this sort of weird manipulative relationship they have going on, even though they're both essentially, I think, supposed to be characters we like or think are good. I thought that was interesting, too. I mean, There's little flickers here and there.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of the Lord of the Unzip Flies going on.
Oh. <Yeah. laughs>
It's time to go around the dial. First up, Tara.
I'm just going to make a brief mention of My Dad Wrote a Porno, which is a new HBO comedy special. The only reason that I watched this was that, one, we got a screener. Second is because it co-stars Alice Levine, who we knew from Taskmaster, the most recent season or two seasons ago, possibly. I guess this is a really popular British podcast about this guy whose dad wrote a porno, as the title suggests. And I guess the podcast is just like him reading selections from these bad erotica novels that his dad wrote badly. But, and I had never heard of it until it became a special on HBO, but I'm very curious about this podcast that I'm coming to like probably years after it premiered, because I want to be part of the "Is My Dad Wrote a Porno" fake discourse, because it seemed extremely fake. Like, not to say that an amateur writer can't be bad at writing sex, of course good writers are also, but like the selections of this seemed super duper fake to me. So if anyone out there has actually listened to this podcast and has an opinion on it, I would love to know. Anyone here what listen to it?
Nope.
Okay.
He's dead though, right? The dad, isn't that part of the big hook of it? Like, he's going through his stuff when he's after
that he's dead.
The dad is dead, right?
Maybe. I don't recall that from the special, but maybe I wasn't paying close attention.
Oh, okay. I haven't listened to it either, but I knew that was the premise, but yeah.
Well, that would make sense, because I was kind of waiting for like a big reveal of the dad to come out and be like, yes, I am real and I wrote this, but if he's dead, okay, fine, that explains it. But I still don't necessarily believe that they're real. So I'm curious to know what people who've listened to this podcast think about this. But mainly I wanted to talk about Klepper, which is the latest kind of comedy explainer show from a Daily Show alumnus show. This one is on Comedy Central. It features Jordan Klepper, who was a correspondent on The Daily Show. And the first episode is, I guess it's just him like going to different parts of the country investigating phenomena. This time he goes to Killeen, Texas, where there's a group of guys who do like amateur wrestling as a form of kind of therapy, because they're all veterans and they have PTSD and this is what they do to deal with it. And this was better than some of these shows that I've seen, certainly. I've usually watched one or two of like all of them just to get a sense. Klepper has a very nice energy. The tendency in a lot of these shows is that the host will be very arch and glib and really off-putting, and there's a real attitude of like, look at these fucking idiots.
Basically,
to all of these
Craig Kilborns.
Yes, and sometimes they are fucking idiots and it's deserved, but this one, it was handled really delicately. He, I thought, was very likable, and they started out the episode by saying there are 22 million veterans living in America, and Dave and I both were like, they're what? Like, that number seems incredibly high for a country. I mean, granted, lots of people live in America, but that number seems very, very high to me. So it was just interesting how they show like this, the choreography of it, and how you know, it's when people say it's fake, it's not really fake, like hits are real and stuff. And, you know, it's planned, but injuries do happen and are definitely real. And then also sort of weaves in like why people need to find alternate ways to deal with PTSD, because the VA is like extremely unequipped to deal with people who have problems. And all they want to do when they do get treatment is, you know, they have pills thrown at them and this isn't what they want. And also what came through too was the need that people have to create communities and like just be around other people and not be so isolated in their own pain. And I actually thought this was really good.
He has a humility to him that serves the show very well.
It's a stretch, obviously, to say this is doing a public service, but I thought it was handled nicely with a tough subject, and I've certainly seen it done worse. That seems like damning with faint praise, but it's not. I actually thought it was good, and we'll continue watching it. So it's on Comedy Central Thursday nights, I believe. for my plug, Haley Lou Richardson was on the last episode of Jane the Virgin. And when I was looking her up to try and confirm that it was her when I was watching the screener, that was when I found out she's engaged to Brett Dyer, who plays Michael. So I guess that's how they got her. But anyway, I've spun that into a Haley Lou Richardson appreciation post on Primetimer because I love her. Will love her forever since Support the Girls. So we'll link that in the show notes, but you can check that out.
Our second stop, Emily. Emily, what are you talking about today?
Well, this is a show that I've drawn out for a very long time. I tend to do this with shows that I love, and it just came to the end of a very long season of, I believe, 55 episodes.
Whoa.
Something like that.
My God.
This is the Japanese reality show Terrace House, which is on Netflix. All seasons but one are available on Netflix. If you've not heard about it before, it is basically the real world in Japan, except it's incredibly mellow, like with none of the drama. There's drama, but like it's a bath that you kind of ease yourself into, and you get very used to its tempos until you're at the point where somebody buying a pair of Minion socks for one person but not another person is like the biggest thing that you've ever witnessed in your life, and you're screaming and like have to watch the next episode instantly. It's a really incredible show. This last season they have a house that is, it's been in Tokyo before. They've had a couple of locations. This one is about 2 hours outside of Tokyo, in this sort of rural mountain town, kind of where they had the, near where they had the 1998 Olympics. And, they rotate. So you can come and leave at any point. House members can come. They start with 6 house members. If people want to leave, then they'll leave, and they'll bring somebody else in to replace them. So it's sort of this rotating thing that goes on over a year. And they just finished this entire cycle in this house. And the final plot line and what they chose to go out on was a incredibly ill-advised love story between a commercial model and the bassist for what appeared to be a very popular band in Japan, who was like, they usually don't have celebrities on this show, but they had, this guy decided he wanted to be on Terrace House. So they let him come on the show. And he, apparently made a mean curry, but was like way too nice. And it's really hard to describe the plots and the drama on the show without sounding like you're just watching a live feed of the inside of somebody's house. but that's basically what it is. And it's a whole thing to get into. The Reddit for Terrace House is like, I'll consult it immediately after watching an episode. so I highly recommend Terrace House. It's I would start with the second season if you get into it now, but
This is a show I only know from like screenshots and memes from Twitter. So I'm interested. I'm fascinated to hear what it actually is.
Yeah. the other incredible thing about it is that it has a panel of commentators, and they're mostly comedians. Some of them are like hosts, like professional hosts, like the equivalent of like a Ryan Seacrest or something, who during what would be like a commercial break discuss what just happened on the show. So it kind of has that, what was that show that was it a British import where they were just like show people watching television live? It kind of has that appeal, but it kind of also makes it feel like you never need to take a break from watching it because you're having a conversation about what just happened with your friends on TV.
Yeah.
That's part of the show.
So. Slow TV meets FOMO.
Yes, absolutely. It's great.
It feels like if you're watching a Housewives show, but then at the commercial breaks, it was like Andy Cohen commenting on it mid episode.
Yeah.
Okay. This sounds good. I'm in. You convinced me.
Yeah.
And to plug, I believe you also have a podcast, Emily.
Yes. Yeah. My podcast Night Call that I co-host with Molly Lambert and Tess Lynch. I don't know if anybody remembers this from back in the Grantland days. That's where Tara and I met in the trenches at Grantland. And we used to have a podcast there called Girls in Hoodies, which Tara also guested on at one point. And we are just past our first year, and we just started a Patreon. We're kind of trying to do more stuff like a newsletter and everything we're about to launch. So big things happening in the world of my podcast, but check it out. It's about paranormal things, weird science things, bizarre entertainment that nobody else is talking about.
I feel like cults are a frequent topic also.
Cults are a frequent topic. Aliens are a frequent topic. We take calls from people. We're very much inspired by like the Art Bell Coast to Coast type format. So that's our kind of vibe. And so far it's been really, really fun. It's been fun to have a podcast with those two again. So yeah.
We will link to that in the show notes as well.
Sarah D. Bunting.
It is me, your Amazon B+ show correspondent. This time I'm talking about Sneaky Pete, which is actually more of like a strong B. Season 3 just dropped on Friday. There's just something about the show that's like, it always seems like it's about to figure out what makes it good and only do that. Like, just when you're about to be like, I don't care necessarily about like the ancillary families dramas and maybe the parents aren't dead and now the teenager's going to California, like, fine, go, don't come back. Just focus on the con artistry parts of it. If you're not familiar with the show, Giovanni Ribisi's character, not actually named Pete, basically stole his cellmate's identity when he was paroled so he could hide from this crime boss played by Bryan Cranston, who was pissed at him because he was conned out of whatever. Not that important in the grand scheme of things, but this is what the show doesn't get. Like, we want to see the cons. And there's a lot of really good actors in the show. Maren Ireland, Margot Martindale, Peter Garrity, that it's like, just get everybody in on it and just do cons. Like, be leverage, but better with swears. I don't think that's a lot to ask for. Apparently it is. Season 3, now there's sort of like this new character from Pete's past. We never heard of her before. She's like total manic pixie grift girl. Like, the actor's fine, but the character is just like, why are we doing this? Especially when the late, extremely great Ricky Jay is often on screen also. And it's like, just like put a camera on that guy. And that, I mean, that's a good show. But I'm going to, you know, continue watching the entire season because occasionally they just show you like the setup and breakdown of a big store con. And I'm extremely 24/7 here for that. And I will sit through a lot of other sort of squishily written family garbage. And the episodes are like, they move right along and the production design is good. And it's fine. Like, you're not going to be angry. And each episode is like a respectable 47 minutes. So even if it's not for you, you're like, okay, that was only 47 minutes. This is not for me. Bye. But again, that's on Amazon. Sneaky Pete, join me in enjoying Ricky Jay's final performance. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, hearing you discuss it, I feel like you, when you're done with this, you should try Patriot because it seems like a little bit better version of this show, like the things that you like about this show.
Mm. Okay. I mean, that's on
my list.
And
it's on Amazon.
Yeah, but you know my list.
I know.
My list is ridiculous. Speaking of Amazon dramas that are like grilled cheese, I wrote about Bosch for Primetimer and why Bosch is the grilled cheese of TV drama. I will not get into that any further because you have heard me talk about that many times on this here podcast, but I will be following that up with why Sneaky Pete is the slightly less awesome, slightly greasier grilled cheese with the kind of fries you don't like the steak cut, which is like, no, that's not what goes with this. Curly or get the fuck out. And that will be on Primetimer in a few days. That's primetimer.com.
All right. So I watched season 2 of The Good Fight. And when we were talking about season 1 of The Good Fight, me finally getting around to watching it, I was saying that this show is basically the spiritual successor to the, you know, liberal masturbatory celebration that was The West Wing. And everybody say, well, we'll see what you think season 2. I watched season 2 and I stand by my statement. I don't understand why you guys were saying that season 2 wasn't this show.
That's like, not what I was saying. I was saying it was much more this show.
Oh, okay. Well, then you are correct, because
I know
going from season two and now we're watching a little bit of season three. If you haven't watched this show, it's not really, I mean, I guess it's a spoiler technically, but let me just paint you a picture about like how deep this show wants you to like basically fist pump the left, sticking it to the right in these times of woe. The lead character, Diane Lockhart, she is almost grifted by this woman who starts a secret super leftist feminist Fox Force 5 political group in a basement of a church. And she discovers the grift. That person disappears. She takes over this secret organization that is trying to figure out ways to drop Trump's opinion poll numbers through social media and influencer campaigns and stuff like that.
They end up doing their own QAnon. I'm so mad about it this season. I'm really mad. Go on, Dave.
So basically, she becomes sort of a spy in this show of sorts in service of taking down Trump. And there's like so many stupid storylines. Her husband is like somehow taking the Trump sons on safari. You know, I mean, it's all like ripped from the headline stuff, but it's like so many things happened in the epicenter of politics that is Chicago. Apparently it's just so ridiculous. It's not a good show, but it's an enjoyable show. Like once in a while, it has smart things to say, but usually it says them in such an over the top way that it sort of drags, you know, capital I important stuff down. Like Michael Sheen is in season three,
Jesus,
playing the guy who talks like this. And he is so over the top and such a cartoon of a villain that it seems like they're seriously, and I'm not even joking, they're in 30 Rock territory now.
Yeah, I feel like season two was the peak of the show, and now it's really losing the thread. Like, it's getting into like the worst tendencies of like hashtag resistance people. Like especially with this whole storyline with like the people in the church basement. It's like the idea that Diane would continue with them instead of leaving once she found out it was run by a grifter. Like, you're lucky it wasn't run by an FBI agent. Like, everyone is not behaving in rational ways. And like, what I thought was smart about season two was that having Diane be microdosing at the same time gave the impression, like, it felt like the show was evolving along with the Trump administration of like how it feels to live in the country at this time. Like, you cannot believe the shit that's happening, but it's real. But is it? And that was like, you know, Diane's story in season two. And now it's just like she's supposedly off it, but it's still as it's getting more nonsensical.
Yeah.
How far she's going in this incredibly ill thought through campaign against like Trump as a person instead of like the structure of what made him possible. And like, I thought the show was smarter than that. And now I think it's not.
Also, season three, they have decided to have these totally annoying cartoon Schoolhouse Rock explainers in like every episode. And they take you out of the moment. And like, as explainers, they're not very good either. Or no, they're explaining something like a fucking NDA. Like, who's watching The Good Fight that doesn't know what an NDA is?
Yeah. No, they're all by Jonathan Colton.
Of course they are. I mean, he's fine. But I'm just like, it's as I said, it's like one of those George Lucas doesn't have a no man around him moments.
Yes.
Where the show creators just really love this thing. And, you know, this is the 17,000th show to do a Schoolhouse Rock riff. And mm-hmm. We're done. Pop culture, we are done with that. Let's stop that now.
But also, if you're doing it and like your gimmick is like we're explaining who Roy Cohn was and we're going to have him like dancing in a disco outfit on a, you know, illuminated dance floor, like, no, Roy Cohn was like a really bad guy. Like, don't make him the cute little mascot of like dirty tricks. It's really fucked up and dumb.
Okay, so that's a good fight. I have a couple other follow-up things. One, Twilight Zone I want to follow up on. It is not doing it for me. This reboot of the Twilight Zone, it does not feel like what I wanted out of a Twilight Zone series, which is basically like the old one. All the episodes, they sort of glide into an ending instead of having like a great Twilight Zone button
shock
on it.
Yeah.
On the flip side, getting more and more into what we do in the shadows, which I think feels off pretty good, kind of had a lull as they kind of figured out where they were going. the last episode, which you haven't seen, I won't spoil it, but it's a marquee episode, let's say. They've hit the tone that is very familiar, but still different enough from the movie where it feels like it is of the same universe, but you're not getting the same thing over and over again. I think they're doing some smart things. And it got renewed for a second season, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Yep.
Finally, Tim Conway passed away yesterday, and that means Dorf is dead, guys. And that reminded me of this incredibly dumb Extra Hot Great mini we did all about Dorf, which was totally my fault, and everybody was angry at me. So I dug it up. I'm going to play it at the end, add it in post to the very end of the podcast. So stick around for that trip down absolutely stupid memory lane.
Oh, God, Sarah, you were so mad.
It's time for the canon submitting this week. Our very own Tara Ariano. Take it away, Tara.
Hello. I'm here to talk about Rosehaven, one of my favorite recent hidden gem sitcoms. It premiered in its native Australia in 2016, but was imported and aired on Sundance in 2017. It tells the story of Daniel, Luke McGregor, as he returns from the Australian mainland to his titular Tasmanian hometown. Not because, as everyone who used to know him invariably guesses, he couldn't hick it, but because his mother, Barbara, Chris McQuaid, is having back surgery and needs him to run her real estate office while she recuperates. Barbara has barely onboarded Daniel in the low-level clerical jobs she kind of trusts him to do when a knock comes on their door. It's Daniel's newlywed best friend, Emma, Celia Pakwula, who also co-created the show with McGregor, who's looking to flee the mainland herself since her husband left her on their honeymoon. Daniel gives Emma a job at McCallum Real Estate, and gently comedic hijinks ensue. In season one, episode four, like British shows, they don't have titles. Barbara is preparing to return to the office, so Daniel and Emma decide that they should spend their last day in Rosehaven tying up loose ends. In Daniel's case, this means seeking redress for offensives and insults, some of which are very old. Emma hasn't had much chance to leave any ends loose here. Her to-do list for her final day is one item, pub. So she's enthusiastically supporting Daniel in his efforts. This being Rosehaven, gently comedic hijinks ensue. Here's what I feel makes this episode a canon contender. Number one, it foregrounds Daniel's formative years as a victim of bullies. We've known since the series premiere that Daniel's main bully was Bruce, something that has complicated Daniel's return to Rosehaven in that McCallum Real Estate manages the house Bruce rents, requiring that he and Daniel keep crossing paths, even more so than they would in the normal course of events living in a very small town. But now Daniel's bringing Emma to his old cubby house, which I guess is what Australians call a fort, only to discover that Bruce has appropriated it and turned it into his personal wank den. Daniel's dismay at this desecration of the only place he felt safe as a kid has him recalling past instances of Bruce's bullying. Bruce punched him, decked him, which I gather from context is Australian for pantsed, peed on his bag, ruffled his hair, ruining his fringe, and once replaced Daniel's sunscreen with liquid paper, a particularly hostile act to perpetrate on a ginger. But as the story unfolds, we also hear more about Daniel's other past and current bully, his mother, Barbara. Daniel does grant that, uncharacteristically, she built the cubby house in the first place. Clip one.
I can't believe Barbara did this for you.
Well, I mean, I helped a little, but yeah, she can be pretty supportive when she's not being very unsupportive.
As I've already said, this is a gently comedic show, and Daniel's victimization can mostly be played for laughs because it's clear he turned out basically okay and isn't irreparably traumatized. But just as Bruce is still dismissing Daniel as the weak nerd he was in their childhood, Barbara is still keeping Daniel from making meaningful contributions to the business. And on this, Daniel's very last day in Rosehaven, other than when he comes back for Christmas and stuff, he's going to be breaking patterns both his bullies set. Which brings us to my next point, number two. Shows us the best of Emma and Daniel's friendship. Given the breakup of Emma's marriage, the first few episodes of the season portrayed what a good friend Daniel is to her and how he's helped her through a vulnerable time, generally by participating in her goofy schemes. In this episode, Emma is scheming goofily in the service of an important goal, getting Daniel to confront Bruce. A first attempt fails when Daniel freezes on Bruce's doorstep and Emma thinks she knows why in clip two.
Are you ready to talk about it?
No.
Really? Maybe you'll just let off?
I changed mine, okay? I don't care about the cubby house and all that other stuff. It was a long time ago.
It was my fault you choked.
I didn't choke.
You did, but it was my fault. It was too big a deal.
I sent you to the final boss too soon. We need to level your character up a bit, get you to do some smaller things, then Bruce.
What things?
Other unfinished childhood business you have here.
I'm not a trapped spirit, Em.
Come on, what's all the stuff that you wanted to do growing up that you didn't?
I don't know.
Do you want to stand up to Bruce or not?
Yes.
Good!
And here's where the episode ties together both Daniel's bullies, because part of his preparation for getting tough with Bruce involves Daniel, at Emma's direction, purposefully breaking rules Barbara set for him in his youth. For instance, clip 3.
What's this one?
Mum never let me drink juice after 9 a.m. She said I wasn't a movie star in Hollywood.
Right, well, it's 10:40.
Okay. So sweet.
You got this.
If you haven't watched the episode, which you can through methods, we'll get into that later, you also need to know that Daniel is drinking from a huge quart can of pineapple juice. As the episode progresses, and
I think it's bigger than that. It's like a gallon. It's like one of those Costco-sized ones. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. As the episode progresses, and it must be noted, Daniel also chokes in two other subsequent attempts to confront Bruce. Emma helps Daniel do more things Barbara definitely wouldn't allow young Daniel to do, and probably wouldn't want adult Daniel to do either. Take a rope swing over a creek and start a chainsaw. Clip 4. With Emma as his wingman, Daniel also marches into the pie shop to level a shocking accusation. Clip 5.
What can I get you?
Nothing. I was in here before and I bought a steak and mushroom pie, and I'm pretty sure it gave me food poisoning.
Oh.
I thought you should know.
When did you come in?
1990.
That was a long time ago.
I wasn't even born.
I know, but I remember it. I ate it and then I spewed 100 metres from my house. It was also my birthday.
So how do you know it was a pie that made you sick?
Well, it was the only thing I ate that day.
A pie was the only thing you ate? Doesn't sound right.
Well, I was sick.
Sometimes a food poisoning incubation period can be as long as 10 days.
You sure know a lot about food poisoning for someone who hasn't food poisoned anyone.
Can you please just apologise?
I would if I thought it was one of our products.
Apologise!
I'm sorry you're upset.
That's an I'm sorry you're sorry. It doesn't count.
It's fine.
Emma also tricks Daniel into confessing his love to his ex, Grace, now the local GP, by scheduling him in for a mole check, which he handles badly, trying to kiss Grace when she's leaning over him to document his dermis. And remember, Daniel is a ginger, so this is potentially a life and death situation. He should not be distracting her. Daniel is so mortified that he scurries out before putting his clothes back on, giving us all a look at his underwear. And it might never have occurred to us to think about Daniel's underwear at all, but when we see its state of extreme decomposition, that does feel consistent with his character. Daniel and Emma end their day at the pub. Emma apologizes for not having been able to train Daniel to take on Bruce, his final boss, but Daniel's content. He's decided he needs to let it go. Clip 6.
Yeah. Bruce is a piece of shit. Yeah.
As soon as it happened, I was... Okay, just a beer, thanks.
Did he hear me?
Nah.
Hey, Bruce! You're a piece of shit!
What?
You heard me.
Just here for a beer, mate.
Yeah, I'm not your mate, and I want my cubby house back.
Oh. Hey, you left? Get over it. How was I supposed to know you come crawling back from the mainland?
Couldn't hack it.
It's just a shitty shed.
Yeah, it is now. It is now you've turned into a pawn shed. Okay, that's been my space since I was a kid, Bruce. I built it with my mum.
All right, Danny, relax.
Yeah, it's Daniel. And I want your stuff out of there.
Sure thing. Danny?
Hey, let's go. Come on, let's go. You did it.
Fuck you, mate. That was Dan's childhood space.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess you're going to have to find another place to have no friends in.
No, I'm his friend and we went there today and totally fooled around on all your stuff.
Yeah, you think you can just push me around? Bruce, you can't now, okay? I'm a property manager.
He's a manager!
All right. I think it's time for you two to go home. You've had a little bit too much.
Yeah, too much of your shit.
Oh, nice.
Daniel shoves Bruce and, Emma and Daniel end up in lockup, one of the many locations that figure in my next section, which is number three. Having Emma and Daniel undertaking quests all over town offers numerous showcases for Rosehaven's specific Rosehaveniness. Stops already mentioned on our tour of this quirky small town are the Creek, which Daniel still finds intimidating, and the poisonous pie shop, but maybe none is as quirky as the holding cell where Emma and Daniel commiserate about their mistakes. Clip 7.
I shouldn't have made you do all that stuff today.
No, no, it was good for me. Apart from falling over and getting arrested, I had fun.
We were in a bar fight.
Yeah. I'm ready to leave now, but thanks for today, Em.
Ah. It was fun, wasn't it?
No.
That was Bruce, because yes, there's only one cell in this single officer police detachment, and yes, Daniel and Emma are sharing it with Bruce. Up rolls Greg, the town constable, clip 8.
It was nothing. It was a heated discussion.
You called me a piece of shit, Dad.
I was kidding.
Look, I love you all equally.
A very strange thing for Greg to say, given that Bruce has just reminded us, or told new viewers, that Greg is his dad, but it seems like Greg really does love them all equally as he decides they've cooled down and that he will order them a pizza. Smash the carceral state, unless that state is rural Tasmania, which seems pretty chill, but where you do still need to mind your manners. Clip 9.
Shall I let him out, Barbara?
Yes, thanks, Greg. Well?
Thank you, Greg.
Number 4, it keeps the running gags running. The clip we already heard of Emma and Daniel tag-teaming Bruce featured two of the show's running gags, someone from Daniel's earlier life calling him Danny, only to be curtly corrected, Daniel, and never remember or care that it's what he now prefers to be called, and someone assuming that Daniel's returned from the mainland because he couldn't hack it. There's also this, clip 10. That's the hilariously mournful McCallum real estate door chime, which we can imagine Barbara having dismissed as too frivolous a thing to bother fixing. These running bits are part of what give the world of Rosehaven its shape and are also fun and silly. And since, of course, Barbara still needs Daniel as she recovers from her surgery, and this actually isn't Daniel and Emma's last day in Rosehaven at all, we'll be seeing more of them, and there are more new running gags yet to come. Rosehaven places the story of a loving platonic friendship in a setting that belongs in the eccentric TV small town's Hall of Fame right between Sicily, Alaska, and Stars Hollow, Connecticut, and seeing the kinds of things these two loving platonic friends would do with what they thought would be their last few hours here makes for a very effective encapsulation of what makes this show such a pleasure. And I hope you'll agree and that you'll help us finally represent Tasmania in the Extra Hot Great canon. So let's start with the people who have never seen the show before. Sarah.
This felt, it does feel very gentle, but there were a couple of moments where I was it just totally sold me. The first was in one of the clips where he's holding it and like nothing happens. Like, you've been conditioned after seeing many chainsaws in TV and film to think that it's just going to he's just going to start cutting up this entire workroom where they are. He's just standing there holding it, and he's like, I hate this. And she's like, what? So that made me laugh.
I love that.
The flawless timing of his just being like, I'm just going to get my clothes and leave the doctor's office. And his underpants are catastrophic. There's just that one string, and it's like, yep. Oh my God, how much thought went into that? But also, it was worth it because it was perfect. Yes. And then the moment in the bar, quote, fight, where he shoves the bully, who sort of subsides back into his friends in Broadway musical style, cut back to Daniel, who was smiling, and then just his face is like, ew.
Yeah.
Smash cut to the jail cell.
Yep.
And just that you don't know that the guy is in there with them until the end. I mean, the episode is going along and I'm like, I think this might just be a little too, it's perfectly well done, but it might just be a little too gentle and pleasantly funny for me to say that it's canon worthy. But I mean, the underpants, oh my God, so funny.
I also thought of you when we were rewatching it yesterday, when she realizes that Daniel's not her boss anymore and double flips him off. And then he's like, you're not going to be able to drink your wine. Then she picks it up with like her knuckles.
Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, that is something that Buncey is definitely able to do. I also loved her line about a charity mugger. Charity mm-hmm. muggers, like, huh, do you like tigers? It's too much. Like, it's true. It's really true. But yes, this was a very enjoyable, and those underpants, not chef's kiss, but, you know, the disgusting underpants equivalent. Emily.
I feel a little weird now that I've advocated for this extremely gentle Japanese reality show to say that this is just too gentle for me. I came into this completely blind. I read the synopsis to just kind of understand the context of what was going on. I think there's a thing for me where, and this does feel like something that I've seen way too many times, just kind of a conflict, and it always happens in a situation where somebody's coming home to their hometown, where you know the joke is that the adults are acting like children, and they're like, you know, butting heads over these very childish manners, and so that felt, I think that just felt a little too familiar to me, a little too twee. There's like a little, it felt like kind of, I hate to say it, it felt like a Michael Cera movie circa like 2007 or something. It was kind of that vibe. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I won't say that I was terribly compelled to watch more of this show from this episode. Not that it was terrible. It was just, you know, it felt extremely familiar to me, both from film and other shows. So, yeah.
But. Fair enough.
For me, I feel like this is, like, you're going to the big city park or the beach or the boardwalk or something like that, and there's all the vendors outside, and there's the guy that does caricatures of you in the dune buggy.
It is always a dune buggy. Why?
The other person that does the realistic portraits, and those are the ones you can go home and give to your mom. Like, I feel like that's this show, and other shows that deal with the same subject matter, the caricatures are like Parks and Rec and shows like that. And that's not to say one's right and one's wrong. It's obviously, you know, a different vibe, but I feel like that's where this show sort of lives. You know, Parks and Rec is the caricature table. This is the kind of the portrait table with all your charcoals. Or if you're, actually up on your Aussie TV, instead of Parks and Rec, put in Dreamland / Utopia, which is the other show that, what's her name? What's the actress' name again?
Celia Pacuola.
Yeah, that she's involved in that one too.
Luke McGregor's in that one too.
He's right. They're both in there, part. Of course. Yes.
Yeah, his part is smaller in that one,
though. Everybody mentioned all the jokes I really loved. He replaced my sunscreen with liquid paper, which is white out here in the States, I guess. Is such a great toss-away joke. And the chainsaw scene is fantastic. The other part that I like is when he's sneaking a phone shot of the Have You Checked Your Balls Man Up poster in the doctor's office for possible future use. It's such a great character moment there. The effortlessness of the proceedings really sells relationships for me in a way that The Office and Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine would all go very large on. And again, it's not to say there's a right answer or a wrong answer. It's just that after so many shows like those former ones, I really enjoy the speed, the breathing room this show gives these two main characters to have the relationship in. What's missing from this episode is the town itself. They go to a couple places, but there's like this whole ecosystem to the town that gets explored more and more that you sort of miss from this episode that is very fulfilling as well.
It's also not enough Barbara, because she really is mean.
Sure.
I mean, she's not mean. She's very dismissive.
This show is also, at the moment, hard to find. It was available on AMC.com and Sundance's website, but it got delegated to like premium subscriptions only. So I'm just saying, you can find it through methods. You know, when you go through your daily motions, you might be able to find it. if you search for Rose Haven season 1 episode 4.
I'm also not going to tell you to sign up for Sundance now for the 7-day free trial and then watch all these episodes and then cancel it, but that is an option that someone might suggest you do.
All right, so I think everybody's had their say, so let's put this to the official vote. Sarah Bunting.
Yes.
Emily.
No.
It's okay.
Oh, we're not going to bite.
That's fine. That's okay.
That's this democracy. It's sexy teens doing democracy right here.
I just learned about democracy from society. So
I'm going to vote yes for this one. So that's two, and that's all you need. So. It's Rosehaven, Season 1, Episode 4. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has the winner.
Speaking of democracy and dystopia, our winner is J.J. Abrams and Jordan Peele, who will donate their fees from upcoming Georgia Shot TV series Lovecraft Country to the Georgia ACLU and Fair Fight Georgia to oppose the state's new abortion law.
Loser is Constance Wu. So what happened was a whole bunch of shows got renewed and a whole bunch of shows all got canceled at the same time on Friday. And she rage tweeted in response, fucking hell, so upset right now. And people were like, wait, what? Because her show got renewed. And then she tried to explain, initially walking it back like it was about something else. And then later did a whole notes app tweet explaining her situation. And I gather the situation was she was up for or developing another project. And now she can't do whatever that other thing was because of Fresh Off the Boat getting renewed. But she said things in her explanation like, playing Jessica is fun and easy and pleasant. I get to work with a kind and pleasant cast and crew, which like feels kind of dismissive and also like it's beneath her. Say that this is, it's pleasant and easy. It's like, okay, not very nice about the people that probably are maybe putting in more work. Not to say she's not, but that's a weird way to describe it. And then closed it all up by saying, it's very meaningful when you make the choice to believe women. Like, that's not what that phrase means.
I don't want to be on your side, Tay.
Yeah. So I've seen like some backlash to the backlash about this being like, can't we let a woman, you know, why does the narrative have to be about her or as a person of color, like not being grateful enough for the job? And it's like, it's not that. The issue is you melted down online and everyone saw. Like, this is, you embarrassed yourself. Don't do that. Don't be too anything on the internet. That's not what the internet is for. Like, tell your friends or type it all out and then don't post it. Like, these are all options that are available to you. Because then if you had done that, you wouldn't have been in the position of like someone from another show on your network that did not get renewed saying this is not really cool because it's not. So
I don't know. I feel like I need to take devil's advocate for Constance Wu here.
Please.
Also, I think I'll tell you guys off pod. I heard the goss on what the thing was that she had to turn down because of taking this new season of Fresh Off the Boat. It's like, ooh, fine. I don't know. I mean, whatever. If she's excited about it, that's fine.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's no middle ground now, right? Like, I think, like, Constance Wu is very funny and talented, and she, like, had a huge breakout last year with Crazy Rich Asians, and I think, like, I don't think anybody at that point would have contested, like, oh, it seems like she's, like, primed to go on to good things. I can understand her frustration of having to do this, essentially. Like, I don't know, Fresh Off the Boat is, like, fine. It's like Full House. It's like,
oh, I don't watch it. I'm not sticking up for the show at all.
Oh yeah. No, I understand her frustration. I just think she expects to be pitied for having this meltdown online. And it's like, that's just not how it works. Like, even if you should be, that's not how it works. Do you know what I mean?
I don't feel like she's asking for pity so much as like trying to clarify. And of course that never works. I guess I have pity because yeah, I can see myself doing this kind of thing. That's what I'm saying. It's very easy for me to imagine like getting bad news about a job that I have to keep doing that I don't enjoy and just like forgetting my filter for a second. And then not only being criticized for being ungrateful or whatever the accusation is, but then also like, now everybody also hates you as a performer and as an actor too. Like you're not just a good a bad spokesperson. You're also now like, we hate you and you're canceled. Like, I don't know, that feels like I feel like you can say she did not express herself well in this situation, but also that's fine.
Oh, I mean, oh, I think we agree. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She should not be canceled. I'm not going that far. I'm just saying this is like a classic Meltdown May move, and like it's embarrassing more than it is like something to be
right,
like deeply ashamed of or that should ruin her career or anything like that.
Oh, but it's just the rhetoric was so intense around it. Like, for sure.
It really was. Yeah. We were like, oh, Constance, just stop. Put the phone in the toilet and go
text your
down
friends.
Right now.
Just text your friends. Like,
I have a friend who just became a showrunner of her first show and has basically quit Twitter because she's just like, there's no upside for it for me now. Like, now that I'm going to be scrutinized for things, there's no reason for me to be, you know, spouting off half-hearted opinions about things. No win to that. Yeah.
Yep.
Speaking about answers you would love to take back, do you know what time it is?
Game time.
I feel like that's the first good transition we've had in about 7
months.
All right, everybody, this is the 4th game time of the season. Season scores are Tara 2, Value Guess 1, Sarah 0. Today we are playing What's My Job from Joshua Saltzman, the Saltzman, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing. Today's game is also thanks to the fine people at EHG Assist who helped me flesh out the number of questions here.
The only reason to be on Twitter is to be on EHG Assist.
Today's game is fast and simple. I will give you the name of a character and the show they are from. You tell me what they do for a living for a point. There are no hints in this game since you're getting a lot of information up top. Tara, steal meal situation, please.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah DeBunting has 5 steal meals. I have 3. Valued guests have 1. So how this works, Emily, is if someone else misses their answer and you know it, you can jump in before Dave gets the correct answer and say steal meal, and then you can steal that point.
Okay. All right.
All right. We have 66 jobs to figure out today, so let's get to it. Throw it to Picky to see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. Emily's going to go first, followed by Sarah, and then Tara. Are we ready to play What's My Job?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
All right. Emily, here you go. First up, Miranda Bailey from Grey's Anatomy. What's her job?
Surgeon of the brain. I don't know.
She is chief of surgery, surgeon general. I'm going to give you that. She is a surgeon as well.
Yep.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, okay.
Harold Weir from Freaks and Geeks. What's his job?
Harold Weir? He owns some kind of store. Hardware store owner?
I'm going to give you that. Sporting goods store owner.
Oh, sporting
adjacent.
Goods. You don't have to give me that.
A lot of overlap there. I'm going to give
it to you. I thought hardware store too. Yeah.
A lot of sporting goods stores are hardware stores in parts of the country.
I'll take it.
Like Montana. Tara Ariano. Yes. Suki Stackhouse from True Blood.
She's a waiter.
Correct. Everybody's got their first point. Back to Emily. Suze from Gravity Falls. What's his job? Suze. S-O-O-S.
Night Watchman? I don't know.
Decent guess. He's a handyman.
Okay.
Killing Eve's Eve. Sarah?
She is a spy.
That's...
assassin handler. Works for MI5. What do you want me to say? Yeah, not
she's
that.
She's an intelligence analyst. It's her actual job.
But she's an MI6. I think that's spy is close enough.
Tara Ariano.
Yeah.
Tim Beasley from Spaced.
He works at a comic book store?
The comic book artist. He draws.
Oh, crap.
All right. Back to Emily. Don Lamb from Veronica Mars. What does Don Lamb do for a living?
God, I don't even remember who Don Lamb is on Veronica Mars. It's been ages. I don't know. Teacher.
Steel Mill.
Steel Mill.
He's the sheriff.
He is the sheriff. Go Pirates own Sarah D. Bunting with the steal. Speaking of Sarah D. Bunting, Theodore T.C. Calvin from Magnum P.I. wears a few hats, all related.
Dog owner?
Dog owner. Doesn't pay well.
No, I don't know what he did.
T.C. is a helicopter pilot, tour guide, and owner of Island Hoppers.
Yes.
Tara.
Yep.
2 possible answers here for Laura Roslin from Battlestar Galactica.
She's the president of the colonies.
Correct. And before that, she was
Secretary of Education.
This is getting a little meta here. But for Emily, Sarah Bunting from Downton Abbey.
Pick eight.
So there's a character named Sarah Bunting. She was on Downton Abbey. Do you remember what she did for a living?
A journalist? I don't know. No, that was somebody else who was a journalist.
She is a school teacher.
Okay.
Sarah, Joel Robinson from MST3K. Joel from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
What does he do besides MST3K-ing things?
Got a job on the show.
A space hostage? I don't know.
He's the janitor.
Oh, good for him.
Tara, Liv Moore from iZombie.
She's a coroner. Medical examiner.
Yes. Emily, Philip Jennings from The Americans. You can either give his domestic job or his real job.
Oh my God. I'm going to get clobbered in this game. I don't know. A spy for Russia?
See, there you go. Not that hard.
Okay, great. Amazing.
That and his cover was travel agency owner.
Okay.
Jay Tyler from Wonder Falls, Sarah.
J-A-Y-E. I feel like that's relevant.
Yes. What's her job?
Butler at the governor's mansion?
She is a gift shop sales clerk. Remember Wonderfalls? All the souvenirs come to life and all that?
No,
bullshit?
I don't.
Oh, good.
Repressed it completely.
I still have nightmares about it. Tara Ariano, Grace Adler from Will and Grace. What's her
job? She's an interior designer. And a thorn in my side.
Emily. Wash from Firefly. Hobon Wash Washburn. Firefly.
Wash was an engineer? Chief engineer? No.
It's the pilot. The pilot.
Okay. Space!
All right, this is question 17.
Bird Eagle.
It's Bird Eagle.
Irvin Irving from Bosch.
He is the chief of police.
He is indeed. Tara Ariano, Hermes Comrade from Futurama.
He's a bureaucrat.
He is a bureaucrat. And a good one. What's going on? To Emily, Rupert Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Also a few disciplines here to work with.
Yep.
We'll accept any one of them.
Like a teacher of the dark arts, a professor of the dark arts.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the wheelhouse. I got to give it to you. We'll go for librarian, magic shop owner, watcher, teacher. He's a lot of things. But
I knew he's a teacher. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jessica Fletcher, Murder, She Wrote.
She's a novelist.
Correct.
And bringer of death.
Yep.
All right. After this question, we'll go to our score break. Princess Carolyn from BoJack Horseman.
She is a talent agent.
She is a talent agent. All right. That was question 21. About a third of the way through. What's our scores, please, Tara?
Very competitive game. I have 6 points. Sarah has 5 points. Emily has 3 points.
Competitive. Scare quotes.
It is.
Rainbow Johnson, Emily, from Blackish. Rainbow Johnson from Blackish.
Is she like a publicist or something?
She is something, not a publicist. Anybody know that?
She's an anesthesiologist.
She is, correct. Sarah Bunting, Lenny Bellardo from The Young Pope. The Young Pope.
He is a cardinal?
Higher. He is a pontiff.
He is
the
former
pope.
Cardinal?
He is the Pope. He's a super cardinal. All right, to Tara, Jim Hopper from Stranger Things. What's his job?
I don't know. I guess he's the sheriff.
He is the sheriff.
Okay.
Nice.
Emily, Lincoln Rice from Broad City. What's his job?
He's the dental assistant or dentist.
He is a dentist. Yeah. Sarah D. Bunting, Jean Parmesan from Arrested Development. Thank you.
Jean. I don't remember who this is. Lawyer?
That's Bob Blah Blah.
Oh.
He is a private detective. Private detective. Back to Tara. Two possible answers here. CJ Craig from the West Wing.
Press secretary.
Yes. Later chief of staff. Here's a Mad Men one for you, Emily. Salvador Romano from Mad Men. Sal.
An art director.
Art director.
Nice.
Sarah D. Bunting. Oh boy, Piggy. Mike Brady from the Brady Bunch. You watch the Brady Bunch? You ever seen the Brady Bunch?
Architect.
Ann Perkins from Parks and Rec, Tara.
She's a nurse.
For Emily, Hank Hill from King of the Hill.
Oh, I have no clue. I don't know. Father.
He's into propane sales and propane accessory sales.
All right.
Back to Buncey. Walter Cruz from Homecoming.
Walter Cruz is a...
That's with a Z.
Right. Veteran? I don't remember.
Yeah, I'll give that to you. Soldier?
Mm-hmm.
Tara? Stephanie Vanderkellen from Newhart.
She's a maid or a housekeeper, I think.
Correct. Emily, Derek Wills from Smash.
Dancer? I don't know.
Close.
I'm sorry.
Choreographer.
Choreographer, yeah. Director.
Really? Oh my God, amazing.
Sarah D. Bunting, Javier Clemente Quintana from Felicity.
Quintana, you mean?
I don't know. That's the way it's spelled here. So,
okay. Oh,
yes,
it might
I do mean whatever
be
you
correct
me to, because
he's
you
the
know
manager of Dina DeLuca.
Yeah, he is.
Suki St. James for Tara from Gilmore Girls.
She's a chef.
He is a chef. Zoe Barnes from House of Cards for Emily.
Oh, my God. You know that she's the namesake for Girls in Hoodies. She's a journalist. She's a, yeah.
Yep. Rest in peace.
Yep.
Cameron Howe from Halt and Catch Fire for Sarah.
Programmer?
Yep. Also CTO, I think, later. Okay. Tara?
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Matthews from Scrubs.
Glenn
Matthews from Scrubs.
Doctor?
Glenn Matthews is the,
is the
name
janitor
of the janitor. Nadia
so
Volkov from Russian Doll for Emily.
Oh, wait, sorry, here. What is that?
Nadia Volkov from Russian Doll.
She's like a video game engineer or whatever. Yeah.
Yep. Sarah D. Bunting, Al Bundy, married with children.
Ah, shit. Shoe salesman?
Yeah.
Taking us into our second score break. Lori Bream from Silicon Valley.
She's an investor. She works at a fund.
Yeah, BC. Venture capitalist. We'll take that. All right, that is our second score break. That is question 42. About two-thirds the way through our game. Scores, please, Tara.
Still very competitive. I have 12 points. Sarah has 10 points. Emily has 8 points.
Back to it and back to Emily. From Fargo, we're asking, what is Peggy Blomquist's job?
Insurance agent? I don't know.
She's the hairdresser, played by What's-Her-Nuts. I just blanked out her name.
Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, okay. I didn't watch that season.
Charlie Harper or Sarah D. Bunting. Charlie Harper from 2 and a Half Men. He actually had a job. Wasn't fucking around.
Dick?
Nope.
That was a side hustle.
Professional gambler. I don't know.
He was a jingle writer.
What?
Tara. Tammy Taylor from Friday Night Lights.
She is a guidance counselor.
Is. Cliff Clavin, Emily. Cliff Clavin from Cheers.
A postman.
You sounded so unsure of yourself, but it was definitely the right answer.
I was just trying to think. I like forgot the name mailman. Yes.
Postal carrier.
Regina Mills, Once Upon a Time for Sarah. Two possible answers here, although one's not really a job, but I'll accept it.
Red Queen.
Yeah, Evil Queen, but her job was mayor of Storybrooke, but that is okay. Good. Tara, Paul Buckman, Mad About You.
He's a documentary filmmaker.
Back to Emily, Harry S. Truman from Twin Peaks.
The Sheriff.
Ben Harmon, American Horror Story for Sarah. That's American Horror Story Murder House, if that helps you.
Yeah. Damn, what did he do? Was he an architect also?
He was a psychiatrist.
Frank.
Should we just start saying sheriff for this game? It's like Benson.
Sheriff or
I'm going to give you a hint. No more sheriffs in the game.
Oh.
Danny Tanner, Full House. Tatar.
I think he was a TV host.
Yes. Morning show and sportscaster. Back to Emily. Philip Banks, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh my God, what did he do?
Not sheriff.
Nope.
Finance person?
Person. Correct. He was a judge.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
All right.
Sarah D. Bunting. I guess we're going to find out if this person is in the series seasons that you watch. Tom Harewood, Call the Midwife.
Harewood.
Can you spell that for me, Tara?
I think it might be Harewood for, okay. I think it's H-E-R-E-W-A-R-D, if I recall correctly.
Okay.
Janitor?
I didn't hear that, but by Tara's laughter, I'm going to say you did not get it correct. Tara?
She's a janitor.
The janitor.
He's a vicar or a
pastor
minister.
Or something. Yeah.
Oh, right. That guy. All right.
Serena Sutherland from Law and Order. Tara.
Well, she's a lesbian. Yeah. She's also
lesbian.
She's an ADA.
Yes. Back to Emily. Joni Stubbs from Deadwood. Two answers here.
A bartender, saloon lady. I don't know. I've never watched it.
Saloon lady. I'm going to give you saloon lady.
I would accept saloon lady.
Yeah, she's a prostitute and later a entrepreneur.
Okay, great. Good for her.
Yeah. Elise Keaton, Family Ties. For Sarah.
Architect?
Yes!
<Phew. laughs>
Olive Snook, Pushing Daisies, Tara.
Oh, God. What did she fucking do? Worked in a pie shop? I don't know what anyone else did on that show.
Something cute.
Yeah, something adorable.
Daisy pusher?
Do you want to, like, flesh that out any? Because
no. Pie shop waitress?
Nah.
Pie shop waitress.
Oh.
There you go.
Correct. Mm.
All right.
Ross Geller from Friends, Emily. Did he?
God, what did he do? Oh, God, I have no idea.
He's always at museums, I know that.
What?
He's always at museums and stuff. That much. Off the top of my head. Paleontologist.
Oh, my God, that's the stupidest thing. I never would have gotten that in a zillion years.
Sorry, Sarah.
Go to hell, friends, says Emily. Sarah D. Bunting, Rachel Goldberg from Unreal.
She is a reality television producer.
Tara.
Yeah, slow down on the answers, Dave, because people have steel meals.
Okay. Greg Universe from Steven Universe. Two answers.
He seemed like he was a musician.
Okay. He was also a car wash owner. All right, Emily, here's your second to last question. Amy Farrah Fowler from Big Bang Theory.
Barista? I don't know.
Neurobiologist.
Okay.
That's Blossom, right?
I thought you were about to say nerd fucker. No.
She's also a nerd. That's the Mayim Bialik character.
Sarah Bunting. Two characters here. We want to know what Lem and Phil from Better Off Ted did. They did the same job. What was it?
Butlers at the gubernatorial mansion.
Tara?
They were scientists.
Yeah,
inventors.
Project research scientists. Yeah. Okay, everybody. Nope, Tara's got one second to last question. Kim Wexler, Better Call Saul.
She's a lawyer.
He is a lawyer. All right, this is everybody's last question. Quickly, scores, please, Tara.
Okay. I have 19 points. Sarah has 13 points. Emily has 11 points.
All right. This last question is worth 7 points. No, not really. Emily, Philip Frond from Bob's Burgers. Mr. Frond from Bob's Burgers.
Banker. Yeah, I don't know. A banker.
He is the guidance counselor at the school. Last question for Sarah. Roz Doyle from Frasier, and I ought to know, I'm Frasier.
salad tosser and egg scrambler? Just kidding, she is a radio producer.
She is. All right, now the last question of the game probably should have went to Sarah. Stanley Zabornak, Golden Girl.
Oh, shit. I don't actually know what he did for a living. Plumber?
Nope. Sarah, do you want this one?
Yeah, what did he do?
He was not a sheriff, ergo, I do not know.
He was a novelties salesman, is what he did.
Oh, yeah.
That stands.
All right, that's our game.
It's me, Stan Sayer.
Tara, final scores, please.
Okay. Emily finished with 11 points. Sarah, 14 points. I stayed at 19 points.
Big opportunities here, guys. This is how it's going to work. I am going to give you a character, and you have to tell me all the jobs they've given themselves. All right? Name as many as you can. Now, I'm going to give you the same question, so I'm going to start with Emily. So at this point in time, I want Tara and Sarah to take off their headphones, and I will start with Emily, and I will tag one of you back in via text chat in a moment.
Okay. Headphones coming off.
Headphones coming off.
All right, Emily. For every one that you get right, you will earn the value guests a stew meal for future use. What I want to know is this. How many of Danny's self-given titles from Game of Thrones can you name?
All right. Khaleesi, Mother of Dragons.
Mother of Dragons is one.
The Unburned. Breaker of Chains.
Yep. Three.
I mean, does first of her name count?
I'm going to count it. That's four.
Okay.
Now, this seems like you answered a lot, but there's like 17,000 more to go.
I know. First of her name, Queen of the Andals. Okay. Something of the Queen of the Great Grass Sea?
That's Khaleesi of the Great Grass Sea. You said Khaleesi before.
Of the Great Grass
Sea. I'm going to give you that one. Okay, you sort of combined two answers. Sorry. Yes.
Okay, okay. I think that's all the ones that I can...
That's pretty good. That was pretty good. So you got one, two, three, four, five, six. And I'm going to go out on a limb saying that's going to be definitely the number one answer today.
Okay.
All right, you can stay on. I'm going to tag in somebody here.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah. All right, you have to name all of Danny's self-given titles from Game of Thrones for each one that you can...
That's really generous of you. Or it would be if I could name any of them, but I can't.
Not a one?
No.
Hello.
All right. So, Sarah goose-egged that one. And this is what we want to know, Tara.
Yep.
For every one of Danny's Game of Thrones self-given titles that you can name, I will give you a steel meal for future use starting now.
Khaleesi?
Yeah.
Is that one she was given or that she took?
Yeah, that's part of her title, but it's not the whole title, so I can't give you that point.
Mother of Dragons?
Sure.
The Unburnt? Is she, like, just Queen of Westeros? Okay, then I'm out.
That was one more than I thought you were going to get, so well done.
Hey, I see memes. I'm on the internet.
Queen Daenerys Stormborn of the House Targaryen, the first of her name, Queen of the Andals, the Rhoynar, and the First Men. I probably butchered that name. Sorry, Game of Thrones fans. Lady of the Seven Kingdoms and Protector of the Realm, Lady of Dragonstone, Queen of Murren, Khaleesi of the Great Grass Sea, the Unburnt, Breaker of Chains, and Mother of Dragons. Emily got like over half of them. Emily got like six or seven. Yeah.
I knew some stuff. The Unburnt.
Yeah. Emily got six. Tara got two. Sarah got none.
Tara.
If only every day could be Game of Thrones Day, says Emily.
I know. If this is just a Game of Thrones show, I'd be killing it. I'd be crushing it right now.
You would.
Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Grate. Society was to blame for our latest lead topic, but we branched out as individuals going around the dial, where Tara talked about My Dad Wrote a Porno, Klepper, Emily toured Terrace House, Sarah discussed Amazon's best current fart euphemism, Sneaky Pete, and Dave once again fought the good fight. We traveled to Tasmania for Tara's successful canon pitch for Rose Haven's fourth episode. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
he's a manager.
Sarah D. Bunting.
That was it?
And Emily Yoshida.
You stand in the presence of Daenerys Stormborn of House Targaryen, rightful heir to the Iron Throne, rightful Queen of the Andals and the First Men, protector of the Seven Kingdoms, the Mother of Dragons, the Khaleesi of the Great Grass Sea, the Unburnt, the Breaker of Chains.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grate.
Oh, what are you going to open with?
Hey.
Good. Hey is good. Super casual. High is too intense. High is like a charity mugger. It's like, hi, do you like tigers? It's too much.
This is Extra. Today's topic is Dwarf Goes Bananas. All right, full disclosure. I put this in as a placeholder because I knew I was getting a user one, and then I totally forgot that I put it in there.
Really?
But now we all have to do it because we all have answers.
Do. Bye.
All right. I have an answer.
So the topic was Dorf Goes Bananas. And my copy of
I watched all of Dorf on Golf for this.
Why did you make Stephanie do that?
So what kind of copy was this? Everybody loves Dorf. I said everybody loves Dorf. Put Dorf in TV things.
Oh my god!
Can we get this over with?
All right,
what's going to happen,
Sarah? Why don't you?
Dorf is going to be on SVU.
Start us off. Dave's hysterical laughing has attracted the dog. Sarah, go ahead.
Dorf will be appearing on Law & Order Special Victims Unit. The red herring suspect who's taking upskirt photos but didn't actually rape or kill anyone. Newly minted Dorf expert Stephanie Kangro, take it away. From Dave.
Wait, somebody explain who Dorf is. Nobody
would love to see Dorf on House of Cards. I think he can, you know, really elevate the season from what it was this time around. I think he would be a great surgeon in arms. He could go, you know, toe-to-toe with Frank or Stamper if they're trying to push something through Congress based on some shady Roberts Rules of Order. And, you know, he'd look good in his suit.
I think that Dorf would be a good sidekick to Forrest McNeil in season 2 of Review, because Forrest's whole thing is he's exploring new experiences. He needs instruction. I feel like this is instruction he could get from Dorf. Dave, what is your idiot answer for your idiot question?
Really sorry. I really honestly forgot that. All right. I have two that I came up with. Okay. One is, as an older man, he is a follow up to the guy who got his foot cut off in Mad Men from the lawnmower. And number two, he plays the child of Mr. and Mrs. Bates in Downton Abbey. For some reason, is born without half his legs because of Mr. Bates' amputation.
Okay.
I resign.
End it, end it, end it, end it. Ow. This is the rest of my day, you guys.
Oh my God. Guys, how come Stephanie never comes back on the podcast?